Today is Tuesday, April 20th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinid Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, Chadian President Idris Deby dies in battle with rebels.
But internally, he has done everything to consolidate power in his own hands and his family's hands.
Also, President Biden invites 40 world leaders to a virtual climate summit.
Biden's Earth Day summit intends to show world leaders that things have changed from the Trump administration's disregard for the issue.
Plus, tension as jury deliberates the George Floyd murder trial. These stories and more are next. Chadian President Idris Deby Itno, who ruled the Central African nation for more than 3 decades, was killed Tuesday on the battlefield in a fight against rebels who oppose his rule, the country's top military commander announced. There has been no independent confirmation of Deby's death. The announcement came just hours after electoral officials had declared Deby the winner of the April 11th presidential election, paving the way for him to stay in power for 6 more years. The late president's 4-star general's son, Mahamat Idris Deby Itno, will replace him as the head of the military council, the army announced Tuesday. For more, I spoke with Timothy Donangmaye, the head of VOA's French to Africa service, on Deby's legacy.
His legacy is mostly of someone who tried to have a Chad shine on the international scene, providing peacekeepers to various UN operations. But internally, he has done everything to consolidate power in his own hands and his family's hands. He has several sons and nieces and nephews who are in key positions in Chad. So many people in Chad believe that all the power was concentrated in his own family.
Now, talking about family, there are reports that his son is to assume the position of president or leader of the military council. What do we know about his son?
His son is a general. He has several general sons. His name is Mahamat Idris Deby Itno. He is 37, and he is the head of the presidential guard. This is the most equipped corps of Chad's military. So he is in a strong position. He has that guard, the control of that guard. So he was well positioned to replace him. They set up a military council headed by that son of Deby. But according to Chad's constitution, the person next in the order of succession is the Speaker of the National Assembly.
It is stunning, isn't it, that a president was killed in a battlefield fighting rebels. What more do we know of what transpired before his death?
It's a tradition in Chad that the head of state sometimes goes to the front. You know, it was the case for the previous president, Hissène Habré, in December of 1990. He was on the front with former General Kamuge fighting Idriss Deby's rebels. And when he saw that the war was lost, he came back to N'Djamena and fled to Cameroon, then to Senegal. So, and also Deby being a general and a marshal, he thought it's expected that he goes to the front. He did it in the Lake Chad region when Boko Haram fighters killed about 100 Chadian troops there. He went there when Chad launched an offensive against Boko Haram.
Would it be a stretch to say that the sidelining of the head of the parliament by the general son of the late president, some are calling it a coup, is it?
In some way it is, because the normal succession process allows for the Speaker of the National Assembly to succeed the president. That's the normal order of things. But now that he's been sidelined, I don't know how else we can call it. It's a coup, in my opinion.
That's my colleague, Timothy Demangagne, speaking with me from Washington. While there has been no independent confirmation that Deby is dead in Chad, U.S. military officials have said they believe the announcement is real and that the president has died. Thursday is Earth Day, and President Joe Biden has invited 40 world leaders to a virtual summit on climate change. The United States is in a precarious position internationally after President Donald Trump withdrew from the U.N. Paris Climate Agreement. Advocates expect Biden to turn things around, but delivering will not be easy. VOA's Steve Barragona reports.
We're going to rejoin the Paris Climate Accord as of today.
On his first day in office, President Joe Biden aimed to demonstrate that climate change would be at the top of his agenda. Biden's Earth Day summit intends to show world leaders that things have changed from the Trump administration's disregard for the issue.
It's an opportunity for the U.S. to come back onto the scene to show that it's taking climate change seriously.
The stakes are rising. The consequences of climate change are becoming ever more apparent, with more wildfires, deeper droughts, and stronger storms. The 2015 UN Paris Climate Agreement aimed to put a lid on global warming, but experts say the goal set in Paris is slipping away.
We're at grave risk right now. We're seeing temperatures continuing to climb. We're seeing emissions continuing to climb, going in the opposite direction from where they need to. And that's why so many are calling this a make or break decade.
Global emissions have been on a steady upward path for decades. Current policies will continue adding to the problem. But Wasco says emissions need to fall by nearly half by 2030 to be on a path that avoids the worst impacts of climate change.
If you don't start bending that curve now, the trajectory that one would have to be on following 2030 is just, you know, one that would be incredibly difficult to achieve.
Advocates are calling on Biden to announce a 50% cut in U.S. emissions by 2030. The White House says it will announce its target ahead of the summit. Good. Biden sees opportunities in fighting climate change, like building solar and wind power and electric vehicle charging stations, jobs that cannot be shipped overseas. It's a cornerstone of his $2.3 trillion infrastructure plan.
The American Jobs Plan will lead to a transformational progress in our effort to tackle climate change with American jobs and American ingenuity.
But Congress would have to pass that plan, and Republicans are solidly opposed.
It is a massive expansion of the government, financed on the backs of the American taxpayers, with taxes that will hurt the economy and cost us jobs.
It's not clear the United States will make the cuts Biden wants. That weakens the U.S. position globally.
Until we can sort out those politics, it's going to be tough for us to claim this leadership mantle internationally on the top line numbers.
Meanwhile, eyes are on other major polluters, including China, the world's biggest, and India, a rising source, to announce their climate plans ahead of a major UN conference in Glasgow in November. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
The U.S. Space Agency has developed an app that allows citizen scientists around the world to help scientists studying Earth and the global environment. VOA's Julie Tabor has more.
People across the U.S. and around the world are helping scientists at NASA, the U.S. Space Agency, with an Earth science project. Using an app on their phones, citizen scientists measure the height and width of local trees and share the data with NASA scientists to help them assess the amount of carbon being stored by trees.
We're here at Bowling Green State University, and I have Megan Recker. We're going to be doing a tree observation using the Globe Observer app. Are you ready, Megan?
Oh, yeah.
Participants open the app and select trees from the four main tools.
Now, in order to get the height of the tree, she's got to start with the base of the tree. Then she'll take a photo of the top of the tree.
And then a picture of the entire tree. Megan then walks to the tree, counting her steps to determine the distance.
28 steps. We're going to set our longitude and latitude positions.
So now we have the final results,
which show that this tree is about 16 meters tall.
And now Megan's going to send all her tree data to Globe so that the Globe scientists have access to the measurements that Megan just took.
NASA has satellites orbiting the Earth that measure tree heights from space. The data from app users complements NASA's space observations to help scientists better understand the carbon that trees either take in or release into the atmosphere.
And so NASA can actually use our data that we've collected from the ground to monitor how good their models are. Are their satellites measuring tree height accurately?
Smartphone technology, the stuff we carry in our pocket every day, includes some pretty sophisticated tools that are useful for data collection. And so when we realized that the technology was advanced enough, we were able to combine those into a tool to bring the public into data collection.
Using the tree tool inspired nature lover Candace Gossin to organize group hikes in the old-growth forests of Mount Tabor in Portland, Oregon, and get them involved. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
Minneapolis and other U.S. cities are bracing for possible unrest as a jury begins deliberation after the trial of a white police officer accused of murdering an African-American man, George Floyd. VOA's Mike O'Sullivan reports.
Protesters have gathered daily outside the courthouse in Minneapolis, and residents worry about unrest if Chauvin is acquitted.
The city is kind of preparing for that to happen right now. They're boarding the buildings up, and the National Guard is out in preparation for the bad news.
There are other simmering tensions beyond the George Floyd case. In Chicago, many residents are angry about the shooting by police of a 13-year-old Hispanic boy, Adam Toledo. He was reported to have been holding a gun, but was unarmed and holding up his hands when he was shot and killed March 29th. And Dante Wright, a 20-year-old black man who was fatally shot by an officer during a traffic stop near Minneapolis on April 11th. Police say the officer meant to use her non-lethal taser. One resident says he's sure there are many good police officers, but others are causing problems.
And lack of training or racial bias or whatever it is that they, you know, is the motivation behind their actions, kind of ruin it for the good ones.
The White House press secretary says President Joe Biden hopes any protests will be peaceful.
His view is also that exercising First Amendment rights and protesting injustice is the most American thing that anyone can do.
An unpredictable situation, but local authorities say they're ready. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News.
The European Union says roughly 150,000 Russian troops are massed along the border of Ukraine and in the Crimea, calling it the highest such military deployment. For VOA, Lisa Bryant has more from Paris on the EU's assessment made during a meeting of its foreign ministers.
EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell described Russia's military buildup on the Ukraine border and annexed Crimea as very worrying.
The military deployment of the Russian troops with all kind of materials, deploying campaign hospitals and all kind of warfare has been continuing. I cannot tell you where this figure comes from, but it is my reference figure. Is the highest military deployment of Russian army and Ukrainian borders ever.
But Borrell says for now, and despite separate accusations by the Czech Republic, that Russia was behind explosions in 2014 at an ammunition depot, the 27-member bloc is not planning more sanctions against Moscow.
And by the time being, there is no move on the field of more sanctions to Russia. Things can change. But the situation is the way I'm explaining.
The Czech Republic has expelled 18 Russian diplomats accused of being spies in the case related to the explosion. In a tit-for-tat move, Moscow ordered 20 Czech diplomats out of Russia. The EU has followed Washington in warning Moscow about another key issue, the deteriorating health of opposition activist Alexei Navalny, who began a hunger strike last month demanding better medical care. Navalny reportedly has been moved to a military hospital.
They are responsible for Navalny's safety and health, and we will hold them to account for it.
The prison service said at the present time, Navalny's health is deemed satisfactory and that he's being examined by a physician. Officials also say he agreed to take vitamin therapy. Russia was the top item at Monday's EU foreign ministers meeting held by video link because of the coronavirus pandemic. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
This is the Voice of America. Former U.S. President Walter F. Mondale, a liberal icon who lost one of the most lopsided presidential elections after bluntly telling voters to expect a tax increase if he won, died Monday. He was 93. The death of the former senator, ambassador, and Minnesota attorney general was announced in a statement from his family. No cause was cited. Mondale followed the trail blazed by his political mentor, Hubert H. Humphrey, from Minnesota politics to the U.S. Senate and the vice presidency, serving under Jimmy Carter from 1977 to 1981. Chinese President Xi Jinping has called for more equitable management of global affairs and, in an implicit rejection of U.S. dominance, said governments shouldn't impose rules on others. Xi's speech at an economic forum comes amid rising tension with China's neighbors and Washington over China's strategic ambitions and demands for a bigger role in making trade and other rules.
This is Science in a Minute.
Ethiopian coffee has long been considered by many coffee connoisseurs to be the best in the world. Ethiopia has been famous for its everyday regular coffee to the most select specialty and gourmet blends. A new study on the effects of climate change on growing coffee beans in Ethiopia provides some possible good and bad news for coffee drinkers and producers. The study's lead author, Abel Chimura of the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research, says his team's computer simulations show that the area in Ethiopia known for producing average everyday coffee may slowly grow until sometime in the 2090s. For the bad news, Chimura says their study also shows areas known for producing the more profitable, high-quality coffee types will probably decrease if climate change continues unchecked. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The world can bring the global COVID-19 pandemic under control in the coming months, provided it distributes the necessary resources fairly, the head of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, told a news conference briefing on Monday. He, however, expressed concern over the alarming rate at which COVID-19 is spreading in those aged 25 to 59 worldwide, possibly due to much more contagious variants.
We have the tools to bring this pandemic under control in a matter of months if we apply them consistently and equitably. Last week, new cases of COVID-19 increased for the eighth week in a row, with more than 5.2 million cases reported, the most in a single week so far. Deaths rose for the fifth straight week, and more than 3 million deaths have now been reported to WHO. It took 9 months to reach 1 million deaths, 4 months to reach 2 million, and 3 months to reach 3 million deaths.
That's the head of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. Media watchdog group Reporters Without Borders, RSF, says the coronavirus pandemic has helped to curb press freedom and spread disinformation, with a shrinking number of countries offering favorable environments for journalism. We have Lisa Bryant with more on RSF's 2021 Press Freedom Index, out Tuesday.
Reporters Without Borders' latest Press Freedom Index offers little good news about the state of today's media. While it shows little change from last year, the overall indicator of world press freedom has dropped significantly in recent years. The Nordic countries, along with Costa Rica, are again high up on the index, with Norway ranked first for the fifth year running. North Korea again placed last at 180, with Turkmenistan, China, and Djibouti right behind. Significantly, RSF found the coronavirus pandemic has helped to exacerbate repression. Pauline Adès-Mevel is a spokeswoman for the group.
This year's index, which evaluates the press freedom situation in 180 countries, shows that journalism, which is arguably the best vaccine against the virus of disinformation, is totally blocked or seriously blocked in some countries, and there are three quarters of the whole countries we monitor throughout the world.
In Brazil and Venezuela, ranked 111th and 148th respectively, leaders promoted unproven COVID-19 remedies and false claims about the virus. Still, RSF notes they were debunked by investigative reporters. In countries like Iran, Egypt, and Algeria, authorities cracked down on journalists, in some cases, RSF said, to cover up high COVID-19 tolls. Adès-Mevel says other governments repressed journalists for different reasons.
Even though there was a lockdown throughout the world, journalists were more attacked on the ground. Those covering demonstration, those on the ground covering were arrested more often.
Western Europe and North America fare best in the index. Even so, Germany, where RSF notes journalists were attacked last year by extremists and conspiracy theorists, slipped a place. That shrunk the watchdog's so-called white zone, offering good conditions for journalists to just a dozen countries. RSF also flagged worrying trends in the Americas, where press freedom deteriorated overall, especially in the United States. Some U.S. media picked up fake news about the virus, although others discredited it, and 2020 saw an uptick in the numbers of journalists assaulted or arrested. Africa offered a mixed picture. Burundi, Sierra Leone, and Mali climbed in the press freedom index, but Ethiopia, mired in conflict in its Tigray region, dropped two places to 101. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Experts at the European Medicines Agency are preparing to present the conclusions of their investigation into possible links between the Johnson & Johnson coronavirus vaccine and the very rare cases of unusual clotting disorders detected in the U.S. last week. Johnson & Johnson halted the European rollout of its one-dose vaccine after the U.S. Food and Drug Administration recommended official pause its use while the rare blood clot cases were examined. AP correspondent Charles de Ladesma reports.
Experts at the European Medicines Agency are preparing to present their conclusions into possible links between the J&J shot and very rare cases of unusual clotting disorders detected in the US. Last week, J&J halted its European rollout of its one-dose vaccine after the Food and Drug Administration recommended officials pause its use while the clot cases were examined. J&J has advised European governments to store their doses until the regulator issues guidance on their use. Widespread use of the shot in Europe has not yet started. Charles de Ladesma, London.
Egypt's President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi says that he is setting up a commission to investigate the causes of Sunday's train crash north of Cairo, which killed 11 people and injured 100. The country's transport ministry said that someone sabotaged the tracks by removing a metal rail and replacing it with a piece of wood. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Egyptian Transport Minister Kamel al-Wazir was seen on amateur video inspecting the track where the latest train accident on the country's railroad network took place Sunday. He appears to uncover a piece of wood that he says someone used to replace a metal rail to sabotage a passing train. Wazir told Arab media that he has officially stepped down and has no problems with being replaced by someone else who is more competent, but that the basic problem with the rail network is still going to exist. It is the custom in Egypt that ministers resign after serious accidents for which they are deemed responsible. However, many Egyptians who support the government argued on social media that Wazir should remain in place. Egyptian media showed engineers working to replace about 200 meters of damaged track at the site of Sunday's accident. Modern track-laying equipment could be seen installing the new rail section. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, who retweeted the transport minister's video inspecting the track, has set up an official commission responsible for investigating the causes of the latest train crash, which is the third in under a month. Said Sadik, who teaches political sociology in Cairo, tells VOA that it appears likely that someone intentionally caused the accident.
There was also many photos that showed that the lines in those area where the accidents had taken place were removed and replaced with wood instead of iron railways. And it also suggested that anybody who did it must have knowledge inside the railway system. So that's why the suspicion is filling social media about the latest accident and pointing fingers to the Muslim Brotherhood or some foreign sponsors.
Mithat Kamel, a passenger on the derailed train, told VOA that the air-conditioned cars crashed after the train appeared to speed up. He says that someone pulled him out, but that everyone next to him was dead. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofoed in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.